Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager in my home. This is really my home. This is really my fireplace. This is real fire. And this is totally unscripted. Just you and I. Or is it just you and me? It would be. That's a tough one.
I think it's just me.
It sounds like me, but, you know, for example, grammatically, you should say, if somebody says, so who's there? You knock on the door. Who's there? It is I. Grammatically, it's me. We all say it's me. But grammatically correct is, it is I. Me has to be the object of a preposition or a verb. Which, of course, if you went to a usual American school, you won't know what I'm talking about, which is very sad. When I was a kid, we diagrammed sentences, which also means nothing to most of you watching. Allow me to cry and weep. What do people learn now in eighth grade? Condom placement? I mean, really? Well, is that it? It must be an advanced course by that time. Anyway, it's just you and me, or just you and I, and it's totally real, totally non-scripted. Is that somebody's phone or something? Not mine. Oh my God, it's that one. You want to turn the somebody? That's where I get the questions from. It's not my iPad. Don't blame me. So anyway, welcome to my home. For the first 40 or so of these fireside chats each week, I'd smoke a cigar. Then we learned that Facebook would not allow us to promote the fireside chats, which effectively knocks out vast numbers of listeners. We have a great many listeners or viewers now. And because it's tobacco. As if cigarettes and cigars are even in the same universe of danger. But look, I've gone through this. But that's the reason I'm not smoking my cigar. I feel, I wouldn't say naked, but I feel unfulfilled. I don't know what the word is. Because it's so relaxed when I do that. Be that as it may, welcome indeed. And once again, I will address, I don't always address items in the news in the beginning. And when I like to address all sorts of things in life. And even if I address something in the news on the Fireside Chat, I always make it a larger issue so that if you watch this 2 years from now, it will still be relevant. That's a very big thought. And whatever I write, whatever I speak, I think, will somebody 2 years from now or 20 years from now find what I said or wrote relevant? So that's always in my mind. That's why I hope this stuff is timeless. That's a real hope of mine. You pick up any of the Fireside Chats, you'll find it interesting and relevant. But of course, the big issue as I speak to you is Brett Kavanaugh. And I have to tell you, I feel so bad for him that I can almost weep what has been done to him and his family. Do you know that people on the left even mock his saying that his 10-year-old daughter prayed for Dr. Christine Ford, the accuser? Do you know what a level of meanness you have to reach to mock that? Is there anybody on the right mocking her? There are plenty of people who write why they don't believe that her testimony is valid, but mock her? There's so much more meanness on the left than on the right. It is such a fact of life. And I read my column this week. I come out with a column every Tuesday, and I really hope you look at it. You could just go to DennisPrager.com and sign up to get it. But it's on Town Hall. It's at National Review. And so many other places on the internet, in Investors Business Daily, and newspapers take it, like the Cleveland Plain Dealer. But anyway, I would like you to see it. It is about another explanation of the left. People on the left, having rejected the religious bases of morality, and they have essentially rejected middle class norms. so that when Robert De Niro gets up at the Tony Awards and says F, and he uses the F word, Donald Trump, and screams it out and they're all cheering, that is his way of saying normal moral norms don't apply to me. That's what it means. That's what the left is about. Normal moral norms do not apply to them. So if you want to show a severed head of the president, you want to mock his son, you want to, his young son, I don't know, 12 years old, whatever he is. If you want, and likewise, Matt Damon doing Saturday Night Live, mocking Brett Kavanaugh, would any program equally big among conservatives mock Christine Ford? It's inconceivable. We would consider it tasteless. But when you don't think moral norms apply to you, you can destroy people and act cruelly because you know you are so right. You are above, or as Nietzsche put it, you are beyond good and evil. So read my column about that. It explains a lot. This man has led a good life. Everyone acknowledges what a good life he has led as an adult. I mean, from college, or even, or let's say 21, okay? From 21 to, what is he, 53, 54? 33 years? Been faithful to his wife, been committed to his family, coaches, young girls' basketball league. They love him there. Hundreds of women have written, or at least 85 plus more, so over 100 women who've worked with him, Republican and Democrat, have spoken about how he respects women, but it doesn't mean anything. One woman says he did something to her in high school, and he is now called by some on the left a serial rapist. My heart goes out to him. I wrote a piece, you could see it on the internet, it's called The Rape of a Name is Also a Rape. I wrote it about, 11 years ago. Again, you could look it up. And I believe that. You know, I forbade on my radio show during the Clinton era, I forbade anybody from telling Monica Lewinsky jokes. And I said, why? That woman is created in God's image. I will not allow anybody to call the show, Republican or Democrat, and mock that young woman. Because there were so many Monica Lewinsky jokes, as if she wasn't real, as if she was meant to be the butt of jokes. I don't like cruelty. It's one of the biggest reasons I don't like the left. They're just meaner. Does the right close bridges and tunnels and highways? Do right-wing mobs go into restaurants and scream at Democrats who were having dinner? There's no parallel. But if you're beyond good and evil, you can act that way. If you make your own standards of morality, having rejected Judeo-Christian standards and traditional American standards, then you can do whatever you want. So this man's name earned, it's not easy to lead a good life. It isn't. It takes daily effort. Like to make a good body takes daily effort, with working out and diet. It's not easy to be an honorable human being consistently. And then to have your name smeared like this. My position from the beginning, and I wrote it as my column that week, was that it should not have been taken up as an issue. You can't come the week of a vote. One person says something happened 36 or 35 years ago in high school, and you're going to stop the wheels of the country? I mean, I'm sorry. It just doesn't work like that. But the bigger issue is, and I raised this on my radio show today for an hour, if you lead a good life, what does your sin, and I don't believe he committed this sin, but if he did, what is the sin or the sins of high school tell about you. And if you've led a good life, nothing. It's one of the basic ideas of morality in the whole West, based on the Judeo-Christian traditions of Judaism and Christianity, that we admire people who change their way. Now, if somebody is 21, applies for a job, and then somebody said, well, you know, 4 years ago, I want you to know 4 years ago, this guy tried to rape me. That's very different. But he's 54 or whatever he is. He's in his mid-50s. There's a big difference. See, I don't know his track record at 21. I can't say, well, you know, he's led this great life for 4 years. That doesn't work. But for 34 years, it works. Yes, that's a very valid argument. We believe that people can change, even if that's the case here. Even, I'm saying. But now all of a sudden we have this new idea. Why not middle school? And I'm serious. Well, you know, in middle school, this kid, you know, in seventh grade, he took this girl into the, you know, the closet in the thing, and he tried to have his way with her. You know, seventh grade. Hey, it's wrong. It is wrong. But it's also seventh grade. And the guy's now 55 years old. I'm just making up a hypothetical. At what age do we even say, excuse me, it's just not relevant? And my answer is from the beginning, excuse me, this is just not relevant. So this is what Alan Dershowitz, who's a Hillary Clinton supporter, lifelong liberal Democrat, I don't think he's voted for Republican for president in his life. And he writes in the Wall Street Journal this week, professor of law at Harvard, again, big liberal. And he writes, this is darker McCarthyism than under McCarthy. Sexual McCarthyism, that's what he calls it. We are in a dark age in the United States because of the left. It is a dark age. That's we are living through it right now. And as one senator said to Joseph McCarthy, have you no shame, sir? One would have to say to every Democratic senator, have you no shame, sir or ma'am? I mean, drilling him on what something meant in the high school yearbook? Are we not allowed to say at a given point, this is absurd? This is just absurd. You're going to determine whether a man should be a Supreme Court justice, not on how he's lived his life and how he's been as a judge, given the highest recommendation of the American Bar Association for integrity, for character, and for legal knowledge and for his life as a judge. And the ABA is hardly a conservative organization. And you're going to judge him on what some words meant in the yearbook, in his high school yearbook. I said, look, this is not the America I grew up in, and in some ways it's better, and in too many ways it's worse. This is the darkness that Alan Dershowitz is alluding to in his piece, this lifelong liberal, which again reinforces my point. Liberalism and leftism have almost nothing in common. Unfortunately, most liberals don't know that. They think their enemy is the right, their enemy is the left. See my PragerU video, differences between liberalism and leftism. It's a very, very important video. So it's a dark age that we're living through. I worry for my beloved country. I really do. The American experiment in decency is fragile. It's fragile. All experiments in decency are fragile. Because the human condition is moral chaos, not moral order. So that's my read on this particular issue. Okie doke. Time for your questions. We begin, Stephen 31, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Or as you say in Toronto, Toronto. They don't pronounce the second T. You're from Toronto. By the way, did you know, folks, talking about Canada, a conservative party has just won the Quebec elections on lowering taxes, privatizing some of the healthcare system, and limiting immigrants. Quebec, the most left-wing province in Canada. A lot of places are awakening to the damage that the left is doing to them. Even Quebec, Canada. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Stephen.
I'm just wondering if you believe artificial intelligence is a real threat to our species in the future. You know, I very rarely get scared. This does scare me. I admit it. It does scare me. It does in so many ways. I don't like going into restaurants and ordering from an iPad. I want to talk to what we now call server, because they don't like waiter and waitress, because it's two genders. We don't
want to do that.
So I want to talk to people. I want to place an order with people. We're going to have less and less human communication with artificial intelligence as they take over more and more work. Indeed, they'll just take over more and more work. I worry about it in terms of finding people work. I worry about it in the intimacy realm. They're going to invent more and more sophisticated sex robots. And there are already men in Japan, and maybe elsewhere too, but I've read about it in Japan, who have collections of these expensive sex robots, and they don't even bother dating real women. So, with the breakdown, with the hostility that has been fomented by the left between the sexes, as they foment hostility between some whites and blacks, because if people enjoy each other, they vote Republican. It's a real danger. Happy people tend to be on the right. That's a statistic. That's not my opinion. So fomenting anger at one another is a very helpful thing for Democrats to get elected. After all, what is the appeal to blacks? We are your protector. We on the left protect you from white racism, right? We protect you Hispanics from white xenophobia. We protect you gays from white homophobia, right? That's the message. And we protect you women from white male misogyny. That's what is being said. So, yes, I worry with the breakdown, with a lot more tension between the sexes, that those robots will become substitutes for women for a lot of men. Not to mention, as I did, the workforce. So it is somewhat scary. And when they get really sophisticated and program them with quote-unquote emotions, because after all, that is what will distinguish us, not brain power, but emotions. Because robots, artificial intelligence doesn't have emotions, but they could program emotional responses. And then it becomes worrisome.
Ramsey, 30, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Obrigado, Ramsey.
I got to come there. I was invited. I got to come to you guys in Brazil. We have a lot of PragerU viewers there, a lot.
What are your views on the Brazilian conservative candidate Jair Bolsonaro?
I don't know anything about the man, but I still took your question, even though I'm sort of humbling myself by telling you I don't know anything about him. The reason I'm taking the question is, though, I want to speak about conservatism outside of the United States, in Latin America, in Europe, and so on. It is very often different from our conservatism. it's often really leftism light rather than true conservatism. How many conservatives, and so he may be a real one, but for example, how many conservatives in Latin America or Europe really want to reduce the size of government? That's true conservatism. Big government is leftism. The bigger it is, the more left you are. The smaller it is, the more right you are. So that's an example. And so I would like to know his positions. Are they really conservative in a Margaret Thatcher way, to give a British example? Or are they conservative in that they're not quite as left as the socialist parties? Is he prepared to really reduce the size of government, to increase individual liberty? And on social issues, is he on the left or the right? So these are ways that I would try to judge him. What is his opinion of the Castro regime in Cuba? I would be very curious to know any Latin American candidate's views on Cuba. That's a good dividing line too. But now, as a result of your question, I will look him up. Now, you would have thought I should have looked him up before the question. I understand. It's a fair reaction. Daniel, 22, Lithia, Florida. Any of you ever hear of Lithia, Florida? I know Florida, and I never heard of it. Sounds like, isn't that lithium one of those things? Is it a mood stabilizer? Does lithium come from Lithia? Is Lithia the plural of lithium?
Lithuania.
Could you please ask him to leave? I can't believe he said that. Hi, Mr. Prager. My question for you is on sin. My favorite subject. Particularly level of sin. I am a Christian, and I understand the concept of sin being different, such as man-made laws differ due to the type of crime committed, which I agree with. However, is this biblical? For example, the third commandment states, the Lord will not hold guiltless those who take his name in vain. But is there anywhere else in the Bible or Torah where this is stated? Thank you. Okay, so let me explain. Just as with man-made law, God sees differences between sins. There are not a few, religious people who have argued with me on the radio that, you know, I'm sorry, Dennis, you know, with all respect, and they really do respect me, but with all respect, you're wrong. God sees all sin as the same. And I'm thinking, really, God sees sexual abuse of a seven-year-old the same as taking a stapler from the office? If God really views them the same, then I'm an atheist. I'm out, man. I'll believe in Zeus, because Zeus would have more common sense than that. What kind of God regards abusing little children or burning people alive as the same as taking a stapler from the office? To me, it makes God look like a moral idiot. It makes me more moral than God. It drives me crazy, that view. All sin is the same. I don't know, on what basis is that? So, of course, there's a distinction. I explain, and I beg you, I do, please read the book, The Rational Bible, that I wrote, volume one. I'm writing 5 volumes on a Bible commentary. That one is on Exodus. The first volume came out on the second book because it's got the 10 commandments, and I explain at length that commandment. Taking God's name in vain, and I explain why in my book. It's called The Rational Bible. If you're an atheist, it will challenge you because it's all rational to take God seriously. If you're in the middle, you may move you over. It's meant to change your mind in a totally rational way, okay? And when I explain this commandment, I explain it is the only one God says he won't forgive, meaning God is saying, there's a perfect example. This is the one I think that's worst. He doesn't say he won't forgive anything else. And what does it really mean? Doing evil in God's name. The complete perversion of God's name by doing evil in God's name. The worst people on earth at this time are those Islamists doing evil in God's name, shouting as they blow up people, Allahu Akbar. They are the only people God himself says he will not forgive. That's how bad that is. So that's my answer to you. Yes, of course there are gradations of sin, and that commandment proves it. All right. Thank you, Lithia, Florida. Pammy? That must be Pamela, right? There's no name Pammy. Right? You know Pammy's? She's 19. You're near 19. I'm near 19, too. Yes. I was born in the year 19-something. Were you guys, are you all 20? No, you guys were born in the 19s, too, right? Yeah, look at that. Well, you got my God. 15 years old. Pammy, 19, Ohio, Prager Force. Mwah! A kiss to you, Pammy. I am president of my school's college Republicans, and I've had several people tell me they are unwilling to come to our public events because they're afraid to be associated with us on campus. That gives you an idea of how, that's what I was speaking about earlier, the meanness of the left. We don't do that to them. What advice do you have for helping other conservatives on campus feel comfortable expressing their views? Okay, here's my advice. It's a very challenging answer that I have for you. Will you govern your life by fear, or will you be courageous? That's it. That's my answer. I don't have an answer to feel comfortable. You won't feel comfortable. The purpose of life isn't to feel comfortable. I've often said, the purpose of life is not to have on the tombstone, here lies so-and-so, he or she never experienced pain. The purpose of life is not to avoid pain. The purpose of life is to do good, is to march to the beat of a good drummer. And that takes courage. I mean, you're not going to be killed. We're not talking about, opposing Nazis in Germany as a German. I'm not going to kill you. You'll be yelled at. You might be ostracized by some people in your dorm. Okay. So it'll give you a great lesson in fighting for what's right. You have to show up. You can't be governed by fear. This is, if you're going to, when are you going to stop being governed by fear? At what point in life? If in college, your government, when are you going to stop? At 30, 40? This is a very powerful lesson for you at this age now. I will not let fear govern me. And if enough college conservatives or non-leftists, that's really what it's about, do go to your meetings, then it will take less courage to go to the meetings because more people will be going. The left relies on their ability to intimidate. And we can't let them. They intimidate liberals, let alone conservatives. All righty, everybody. How are we doing on time? What's the time factor here?
20 minutes. Can keep going.
Really? That's all?
I think so.
No. You don't have a timer on there? I'm talking to the crew that comes here against their will every week. I'm kidding about against their will. What's the time? Can you read it? What does it say? I think we're close to 30. What are we at?
25.
I knew it. You see? That in Lithuania. He's got to be on my radio show. He'd go to the punishment room. Let's see here. Matt, 20, Auburn, Alabama, Prager Force. All right. Where do you think we are located on the Laffer curve? Do you think we are at the point where taxes should no longer be lowered to increase revenue, or have we not hit the sweet point yet? So those of you who don't know, by the way, we have a whole video, 5 minutes, that's all I ask of you, on the Laffer curve. It's an extremely important economic principle. I can explain it, but it's much better explained on the five-minute video. It's illustrated. They got a great economist explaining it. But in a nutshell, here's the way it works. If the government has a tax rate of 0%, do they get any revenue? No, right? Because there's no taxes coming in, no revenue. If they tax, so let's go to the other side, 100%. If they tax 100%, will they get revenue? No, because nobody's going to work. If all of my money goes to the government, then obviously, why would I work for the government? Okay. So somewhere between 0 and 100, the government will get the highest amount of revenue. The proof, by the way, is Donald Trump has lowered taxes and the government is getting more revenue. Is that clear? This is not taught to you in college, which is a tragedy. But is that clear? The government is lower taxes and getting more revenue. So clearly, there is a point, it's called the Laffer curve. There's a point on it where the government will get the maximum amount of revenue at some percentage of taxation. I don't remember the exact number. I think that Laffer came out with a number based on all sorts of data crunching. But my position would be we have, I'm sure of it, we have not yet gone that low at all by any means. Believe me, he could lower it more and he will still get more. The government. Well, government will get higher taxes. Look at that video. All of you should, the Laffer curve. This is a very important principle. At a given point, it's all common sense. A lot of times, you know, people often say to me, it's so interesting, people's reactions to me, because I'm regularly talked to when I walk in the airport or a restaurant, and that's fine, and I never resent it. I'm very touched by people coming over and saying hi. And one of the things that there are a few comments I get the most regular. The first most regular is, I can't believe you're that tall. That's the first thing people say. For whatever reason, they think I'm short. I'm 6'4", and it blows them their minds. And it cracks me up because I've been living with me my whole life. So I'm used to how tall I am. So the second one is, I feel like I know you, to which I always respond, you do. The third one is what I'm about to tell you. You know, I listen to you and all you do is make sense, just common sense. And I said, that's right. That's all it is. Conservatism is common sense. They both start with C and they have everything else in common. If it's not commonsensical, then it doesn't work. That's correct. That's the irony. It's common sense. It's common sense that as you raise minimum wage, more and more poor people will be out of the market, out of the marketplace, because places will prefer what we just talked about earlier, artificial intelligence, or just not hire people because it's not worth it to them, but given the small profit margins that they make in their restaurant, let's say. Look it up, how many restaurants in Seattle closed after they raised the minimum wage there. But it doesn't matter to people on the left because they love ideas more than people. It's one of the earliest realizations I made about the left. It's true for Karl Marx. Guy was a true misanthrope, but he loved ideas. So the Laffer curve is just common sense. Well, let's see. It's always hard to say goodbye. Really do. So let's see, what can I ask you to do? I can ask you to watch our videos, and I could ask you to help us, obviously. And I could ask you to get the Rational Bible, even if you think religion is nonsense, especially if you think religion is nonsense. I know it will change your life. Read the reviews on Amazon. Listen, I didn't write a Bible commentary to get rich, okay? Could have written a volume two on happiness and made a lot more money. So I'm not self-conscious about telling you to get the Rational Bible. But it is, a big deal. And it became a bestseller, to my shock. But it's important. All of this stuff is important. It's important to have a higher code than yourself. I am not the author of my own values. That's what it amounts to. Okay, so imagine, imagine that I'm going to puff again on my cigar, but I can't do that anymore. It's okay, life is filled with no. You get more no than yes in life. And the earlier a kid knows that, the better their shock absorbers are for real life. That's why you should never give medals and awards and trophies to kids who don't win. It's very important to know how to lose when you're 7 years old, because most of life is not winning. On that thought, I'm Dennis Prager. This is my fireplace. This is the Fireside Chat. Thanks for being with me, and I'll see you next week.